Hello everyone and welcome to the Smashy Business Show. Today is Tuesday, April 15, 2025. I'm Abdul Majid Awan.
And I'm Warid Ahmed, and we have a lot of trending topics for you today. Now, firstly, His Highness Sheikh Mohammed reviews UAE tax and launches AI efficiency drive at cabinet meeting. And I've heard that this is like the first, that this is the first time this has ever happened. And Dubai tops list of world's busiest international airports for the 11th year, and Saudi Arabia plans to pay off Syria's World Bank debt, Reuters has reported. And we're going to tell you about how Trump's tariffs have actually affected Dubai's property market. And finally, Egypt and Qatar have actually agreed to work toward a $7.5 billion investment package.
Let's start with His Highness Sheikh Mohammed. His Highness Sheikh Mohammed, the UAE is accelerating its transformation into a smarter, more efficient government powered by technology and innovation. At a cabinet meeting held at Qasr al-Watan, Prime Minister and ruler of Dubai, His Highness Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid reviewed major updates on the country's tax system, legislative reforms, and AI-driven governance.
Now, His Highness Sheikh Mohammed revealed that over 520,000 companies are now registered under the corporate tax regime, while 470,000 are on the VAT system, now calling it a key part of our economic foundation. He said the UAE ranks fifth globally in tax policy efficiency and second in fighting tax evasion, according to Switzerland's IMD World Institute.
And also, in a major step towards legal innovation, the cabinet approved the creation of a legislative intelligence office. The new body will link all federal and local laws with judicial rulings and services powered by AI. A new regulatory intelligence system is also expected to cut the legislative process time by up to 70%.
Now, the cabinet reviewed preparations for the upcoming Make It in the Emirates Forum. Now, the UAE's industrial sector has grown 59% in 4 years, contributing 210 billion dirhams to the economy. It also launched the Global Alliance for Energy Efficiency, aiming to double energy efficiency across sectors by 2030.
The UAE's national tree planting drive continues to show results, where nearly 460,000 trees planted so far. Other topics included sports strategy updates, housing finance for 9,400 families, a restructuring of the Balanced Development Council, and approval of 44 new international agreements. The AI thing that Worth was talking about, it's very important. It's going to be the first native AI ecosystem. By native, they mean that all the systems that they build will be built in-house. They're not going to use someone else's AI-built system. They're going to build all the systems. The main idea behind all this AI ecosystem is to make the bureaucratic processes, the paperwork processes, the government processes, visas, Emirates IDs, any process that has to be done through the government systems, they want to make it more dependent on AI.
So, I did see something somewhere. Yeah. I forgot which tech billionaire this was. I believe it was Bill Gates, maybe. But it basically said that there will come a time where both me and you, Majid, will only have to come into the office 2 times a week because AI can do the rest of our job. I truly forgot who said this, but, you know, just speaking of this deal, it's not only Dubai who's doing this. It's also AD, who's doing this. So when His Highness Sheikh Tahnoon was actually visiting Washington just very recently, he met with Trump, Abu Dhabi actually signed a multi-year sovereign cloud agreement with Microsoft, Core 42, G42, the leading AI company in the UAE. Yeah. And basically what that entire deal was to accelerate actually making an AI native government for Abu Dhabi. Yeah. And this was according to Abu Dhabi's media office. Yeah. So, you know, we can see that, in fact, actually, AD was, you know, they were taking the step first. Yeah.
Actually, this news is about UAE cabinet. So His Highness Sheikh Mohammed actually chairs the UAE cabinet. So all the cabinet ministers work for all of UAE. So these policies, all this is for UAE. And yes, Emirates-wise, obviously, we have different things. She told you about Abu Dhabi, Dubai also. They're doing everything they can for AI. Recently, the last update that came from any other Emirate was Sharjah. You can get your business registered, everything, blah, 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 in just 2 minutes. Mm. So you go to a kiosk, it's built. You just put your, oh, I want this company. So you'll put the name of the company, the basic details. You'll have your Emirates ID scanned and everything. If you don't have an Emirates ID, your passport will be scanned. The whole process takes 2 minutes and your business is registered.
You know what, Majid? Right now, that is actually the bane of my existence. So I'm currently updating my bank information. And listen, they've been asking me for a while, okay? But I finally acknowledged him. Like, you know what? Let me try and update it. Majid.
The KYC, there's a process called KYC.
I'm not going to say the bank's name because I love them. But, you know, I've done it 4 times now.
What do they want? Like, what's the process?
It's just, it's basically on the app and you just upload all your documentation.
Okay.
They scan it, but it's just not working. And all the...
So you're trying to open an account?
No.
You already
have an account. I'm updating my information.
Oh, that's called KYC. Know your customer. That's a process that every bank has to do.
Oh, my God. It's not
working. Actually, it has to be done for every financial thing that you do. So if you want to become, if you want to trade on DFM, ADX, any stock exchange, there's a KYC process. Opening an account is a KYC process. It's called Know Your Customer. Mm. The UAE, not recently, like last year, around the third or fourth quarter, UAE came out of the gray list. So there's a very, it's a very scary list, which is white-listed, gray-listed, and then black-listed countries. I've got the association, but what happens is when your country's financials are weird or dubious, you get put into different categories. So whitelist is all
Why
the countries.
Why do you get put into the gray list?
Gray list is when there's doubt about the transactions that are happening within the country. So Dubai, UAE had a lot of people talking about it. You remember Love in Dubai did a Hawala story. We did a Hawala story that a lot of people thought that Hawala system in UAE is very prevalent. But then we debunked the myth that the government has so many policies in place that it has nearly become impossible to carry out Hawala. And there's another process, Hundi also. So they usually, this firm, what's the firm's name? It's ITC or something. So they put you in these lists. The problem that comes with these lists is that you can't do trade at a good rate. So if I'm doing trade with the countries which are a part of this group, I'll be taxed 15% when I'm in the gray list. So when I'm whitelisted, I'll be taxed 5%. Mm. So because of that, UAE just came out of it. And it keeps happening with every country in the world. It's not like UAE was in the gray list. Every other country somehow always is transitioning between white and gray, white and gray. Only a few countries in the world are blacklisted. Syria was blacklisted because of Bashar al-Assad. So it's very rare that someone goes into a blacklist. Iran was blacklisted because Americans and Europeans somehow hate them. They were blacklisted for a long time.
Somehow.
Yeah, I don't know. They have the reasons, weird reasons, but they have the reasons. So blacklisted countries are like completely sanctioned off. They're war countries, sanctioned countries. But yeah, UAE was in the gray list. They came out of white list. Recently, if you try to open a Binance account, if you want to do crypto, if you want to open a Serva account, if you want to open any kind of stock trading account, the KYC process has become more difficult.
See, it's okay.
Not difficult,
honestly,
more...
Honestly, Majid, it's okay. I don't mind it. It's just the fact that it's not
it's
working.
It's not working.
I've given them the information. I've even provided more documentation.
I think go to the branch.
And I think
it's easier.
What I hate the most is that I'll speak with an agent and then I can tell it's AI speaking to me and then I'm like, hey, can I actually have a real agent? And it'll connect me with a real agent.
Nice.
Because I'm like, stop giving me these, you know, like choose 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Then I'll speak to the agent and then that even doesn't work. But anyways, beside the point.
So the basic, just to give anyone who's listening who doesn't understand the documents that are required, if you're not an Emirati resident, like UAE resident and you don't have an Emirates ID, your passport goes, your bank statements from your country go. But if you're in Emirates, you're a resident, you have an Emirates ID, there are like 4 or 5 things. Your country's passport, your Emirates ID, just to prove that you're from that country, and your bank accounts if you already have any. Mm. If you don't, then they'll ask for proof of employment. So proof of employment is if you're working for someone or if you have a business, then the documents, your trade license, etc. It's a very simple process. Yeah, sometimes apps, technology, you know, technology can falter. Elon Musk said that at FIII AI has a chance of going bad. So yeah, sometimes it falters.
But the technology at Dubai's airport is absolutely doing amazing. And that is why Dubai International Airport has once again claimed the title of the world's busiest international hub, marking the 11th consecutive year at the top. Now, the airport handled 92.3 million passengers in 2024, up 6.1% from 2023 and 7% higher than pre-pandemic levels in 2019.
And the figures were released by Airports Council International, which represents over 2,100 airports worldwide. Dubai's strong performance was attributed to heavy investment in infrastructure and technology, as well as the rebound in global long-haul travel. London's Heathrow, Seattle's Incheon, Singapore's Changi, and Amsterdam's Schiphol followed in the top five.
Now, when domestic tariff is included, Atlanta's Hartsfield-Jackson Airport held onto its title as the world's busiest airport overall, serving 108.1 million passengers. Now, Dubai ranked second in that category, followed by Dallas-Fort Worth. Now, one of the biggest climbers was Shanghai Pudong, jumping from 21st to 10th, boosted by relaxed visa rules and China's aviation recovery. I think what I find really interesting about this, Majid, is we're talking about Dubai.
Yeah.
Dubai is a really small city,
yeah.
And we're comparing it to a country like China,
yeah.
Which has one of the largest GDPs in the world. So we know that this statistic underscores such a great achievement.
It's more about Emirates, to be honest, and it's more about the UAE being in the center of the world. That is why Middle East.
Mm.
But it's in the center of the world. You go 6 hours or 7 hours on this side, you go to Asia. You go 7 hours, 6 hours this side, you go to Europe and North America. So the best part about this is it's not just that people are coming to Dubai. It's a lot of people are taking flights from here or like transition flights, all that things. So that is why it's the busiest airports in terms of international flight. Yeah, obviously, with domestics included, obviously, US will win because people fly a lot between states.
Mm.
But even in that category, if you include domestic travel, like Dubai to Abu Dhabi to any other Emirate,
I remember, Majid, when we were covering the Davos conference in Switzerland, I remember there was a list of countries companies. These companies were basically voted the fastest growing companies in the world. And one of them was Emirates Airlines. And I believe, was it Etisalat that was also included?
Etisalat was there. Emirates was there. ADNOC was there. ADNOC obviously has to be there. It's like, I think in the Middle East, the second biggest oil company after Aramco, Saudi Arabia's Aramco. So yeah, ADNOC had to be there. The main point of this story, to be honest, is that despite global uncertainty, passenger traffic reached 9.5 billion people in 2024, and it's the global traffic, an increase of 9% year on year. But ACI warned that aviation sector faced significant risks from geopolitical conflicts, rising tariffs. We saw when Lebanon and Palestine and all these wars were being waged by Israel, a lot of flights were canceled. So yeah, that is also contributing. Rising tariffs, thank you, Trump. Aircraft production delays. We saw Airbus is making more planes, but Boeing is going through a rough period. So that is why also delays are happening.
Recently, Flynas, got its IPO approved in Saudi Arabia.
They still haven't published the portfolio. It was very surprising. I think it was at Eid time when they confirmed that they're going.
First day of Eid.
Yeah. The funny thing is they still haven't published their portfolio. Like, see, when it comes out, we'll know what price range they're looking at. But yeah, looking ahead to 2025.
Global traffic is actually expected to grow at a slower rate, up 4.8% to nearly 9.9 billion passengers. Now, ACI says advanced markets will face capacity and production bottlenecks, while emerging economies will continue to grow thanks to infrastructure investments and a rising middle class.
And a rising middle class is being, at the moment, being pushed by Trump because a lot of people are facing problems because of that. But the whole idea of busiest airport, I personally feel, is that a lot of people actually come to Dubai as well.
Mm.
In the tourist season, which just passed, it's still continuing. I think it will continue till April. It's hot outside now. The last week has been very hot outside.
Extremely hot. It was crazy. It was a really bad idea of me to decide to go have a wokyo and sit outside too while wearing a abaya.
So, but yeah, Dubai itself is a hub for tourism. Yesterday, I was reading something, 22.7% of the whole GCC, if you included the seven states of GCC, 22.7% of their GDP is based on travel and tourism. And I think Saudi Arabia and UAE would be the top ones, obviously, 100%. Mm. I didn't read the detailed report. We'll do a story on
but
it, most probably.
Speaking, you know, Majid, you just mentioned Saudi Arabia now. There is big trending news that is happening today between Saudi Arabia and Syria. Now, Dubai's worries. Don't worry about it. Now, basically, what's going on right now with Syria and Saudi Arabia is that Saudi Arabia has actually agreed to pay off the World Bank debt of Syria. And the reason why this is such a monumental big story is that, you know, if you're looking into Smashy Business, just recently, you know, we released a story that for Syria to completely recover from Bashar al-Assad's corrupt regime, they need $400 billion.
Yeah.
And, you know, for Saudi Arabia to plan to actually pay off their outstanding debt, I mean, this is big news.
Yeah, and this would be the first known instance of Saudi financial support for Syria since the fall of former President Bashar al-Assad last year. The Gulf re-engagement comes after prior aid efforts were delayed due to concerns over U.S. sanctions. We saw that about Qatar as well. Qatar was supplying oil and gas to Syria, but they got U.S.'s approval because U.S. has sanctions on them. Mm. Qatar does trade
but
with
not
U.S.
Just that.
They can't just do...
Reuters, I remember Reuters came out with an article that Qatar is actually supplying the salaries for Syria, for every single employee in Syria's government.
Yeah.
So, you know, to see Saudi Arabia, to see Qatar, you know, coming together, especially when Syria reportedly owes the World Bank $15 million, that is a big number.
Yeah, and usually it happens that whenever you take a loan from any World Bank, IMF or whatever, there's a period where you have to return the money or stricter terms come into place. You have to pay 20%, 30%. The percentage of interest that you'll pay on the payments increases. So I think Saudi can pay 15 million. They can, I think. 15 million is not a big amount for Saudi. It's a big amount for Syria because 13 years of war.
Remember what Trump once said? Where he went to Saudi Arabia and he was raising, and I think what killed me the most is he had a poster.
Yeah.
Like it was
he's
like
good with these, right?
You know what it is? No, Majid, I would make posters in school projects like that when I was like in year six. Not even in high school. Like
here,
in
he's still
school.
A high schooler.
And he pulled out, don't let him hear you say that. But he pulled out that poster and he was like, you know, Saudi, like, this is peanuts for you. You know, this is peanuts for you.
Even with the tariffs, he came up with two boards. A guy came and gave him the two boards and he said, took the tariffs. And I was like, bro, what are you trying to do?
And you know what's so crazy about all of it?
I think he believes in the visual, right?
I think he does. I think it's also this fact of, what's it called? Like, you know, America, when Trump came into power for his second presidency, you know, him, Sam Altman, they signed this $400 billion, is it 500? I forgot. The Stargate project.
$500 billion.
Yeah, they signed a They signed a $500 billion Stargate project, and it was backed by MGX, which is a technology fund in Abu Dhabi in the UAE.
Yeah.
But the point is that, and Trump made a speech with Sam Altman standing at his side where he was like, you know, we're going to improve AI infrastructure across America. But then this is the same person who's giving me a poster to show me the tariffs. Like, you could just, you could make an AI graph or something.
So just bring screen with you and explain on it, right?
I think, you know what it is, Majid, no matter how much no offense to the 50-year-olds, 40-year-olds, 60-year-olds, love you guys, but no matter how much they'll embrace AI, I still think that a lot of people hold tradition very dear to their hearts. Like, I've met a lot of people, by the way, when I'm networking, they want to take my number. And I just don't want to give my number. I find it really personal, by the way. Like, I know that it's a good way to stay connected, but I like connecting with people through Instagram. Because if you think about it, like, imagine if I meet someone, it's like I can keep that connection with them by liking their stories.
Yeah.
Liking their stories. I don't have to, on WhatsApp, to actually maintain a relationship, you have to be like, hey, how are you? Yeah. I don't want to say, hey, how are you? So I think a lot of people
are
still...
You remember we went to Step and she was asking for Instagram IDs. I was like, LinkedIn, please.
But by the way...
That's the generational difference.
By the way, I caught up. I got LinkedIn on my phone. Don't you worry. Now I won't just be asking for Instagrams. Yeah, but it's strange because for them, these people, Majid, for them actually asking for their Instagram, like I've noticed in the older generation, asking for their Instagram is more personal than asking for their phone. But younger people my age, we find phone numbers personal. Yeah. But with Instagram, it's like, oh my God, take my username. Yeah. Don't even worry about it.
The thing that we're talking about just reminded me, I took a theater class in my master's. It was just one of, I don't know, course included in our core courses.
This is very magic coded.
Yeah, the thing is, it just reminded me that in theater, whenever you're on stage, you need to have one prop with you. So every person has a prop. Sometimes it can be a sentence even.
So you think that poster is a prop?
Yeah, and very good theater artists, they're known for their props. So if you look at any big productions, Shakespeare, anything, they'll always have a prop. Shakespeare will always have his that hat that he wears and or a pen, the feather pen that he has. So the greatest of the theater actors have a prop. I think with Trump, it's his boards. He is, trust me, there's a very difficult word for these guys, the theater actors. I'll remember that word and I'll tell you, it's going to add to your vocabulary, add it to mine. But that's the main idea, that you, when you go onto a stage, which Trump goes literally every day, you need to have a prop with you. So people don't look at your hair. Funnily, just to add one small thing before we move on to the next story, Trump has signed an executive order. He signed so many that it's very difficult to keep track of them. But recently, he signed one executive order about water pressure in the taps. So in the US, there is a law, actually, that the water pressure in the taps, in the showers, in everything can't be above certain level.
Yeah.
He was like, no, remove all the... It's kind of a water conservation strategy by the US. He removed it. He's like, no, I need water for my hair. I need to keep them good. So imagine, he's the president of the biggest economy. Everyone is quoting a different number, but it's nearly $25 trillion of GDP. That guy is worried about his hair, and he's like...
He's worried about his hair, and at the same time, he's actually slapped 40% tariffs on Syria.
Syria was 40%, yes.
Yes, right now there is a 90-day pause on the reciprocal tariffs that were applied, but the fact that, you know, he applied 40% to Syria, and Saudi Arabia has stepped up after Qatar, and they're offering to pay off their $15 million debt, I think... that this is a good move towards Syria advancing. I think what Trump has done to them is completely unfair.
The U.S. sanctions have always been in place since Bashar al-Assad, but let's see, most probably they'll remove it since the good thing is that mediating countries, Saudi Arabia, UAE, Oman, all these countries which have been mediating for U.S. with Russia and all the other countries, Ahmad al-Sharaa is visiting all of them. He was in UAE. He went to Saudi, he went to so many places in the Middle East, and everyone welcomed him. His Highness Sheikh Mohammed bin Zayed, the ruler of UAE, the president of the UAE, he welcomed him yesterday as well. Looked like a very nice, cordial thing. I could only make a few words out of His Highness Sheikh Mohammed, and one of was like, Kaifak, or like, how are you? And I was like, nice, they have such a nice order. He met all of them, everyone met him. And His Highness Sheikh Mohammed bin Zayed also said that we will do everything in UAE's power to help Syria recover. So it's a very good sign that Saudi and UAE, the biggest superpowers, the biggest stars in the Middle East, they're helping rebuild one of the countries which is
seen
a lot.
But, you know, just back to Trump's tariffs, I feel like people's favorite topic, one of people's favorite topic in the business world is real estate, and we're going to tell you how Trump's tariffs have affected Dubai's property market. Now, it has actually seen a 70% surge in prices over the past 4 years, and because of Trump's tariffs, it's now facing a significant challenges and rising global uncertainties. Now, a recent Bloomberg report highlighted that trade tensions sparked by Donald Trump's tariffs and a slump in oil prices are casting a huge shadow over the booming real estate sector.
The property market had already begun moderating, with last year's 16% increase in prices lower than previous year's 20%. Analysts have warned, two of them were quoted by Bloomberg, and they say that a slowdown could be imminent. Not a crash, not a bubble burst. It's not going to go down like from $1 million to $100,000, but a slowdown is imminent, particularly with oil prices dipping below $65 per barrel. They even went to $58 per barrel in between. So a weaker oil outlook could lead to fewer jobs for the expats who have fueled demand for Dubai real estate.
Now, international investment, which has been key to Dubai's property boom, is also at risk. Taimur Khan of GLL cautioned that global market uncertainties may deter international buyers from following through with planned investments in the Emirate.
And the Gulf region's economies are closely tied to oil prices, and we know all that. That's why they're doing the diversification campaign. They want to move away from oil. So when the prices are coming up and down, they don't get affected. Mm. And the impact of reduced government spending in Saudi Arabia could also ripple into Dubai. We recently reported about Saudi Arabia and their PIF, the Public Investment Fund, cutting a lot of budgets, 20% budgets for the companies which come under PIF, and that's hundreds of companies. So analysts, same analysts.
By the way, it's actually in a lot of industries. I heard from this Saudi person, Majid, I won't say their name, but they said that this process, by the way, yes, it may have just been announced by Bloomberg, but they've began this since last year, where they've just began to reduce the budgets. And you know, we can attribute that to the fact that, you know, in 2030, there is a lot coming up. Yeah. You know, and during that decade, the World Cup, they're hosting Expo. They want to complete the NEOM project. Yeah. So I think that, you know, the budget cuts, they're completely justifiable.
Yeah. The thing about this is, before I go on, this has never been done, what Saudi is trying to do. It's never been done. It's only been done in like centuries when the Romans built their empire, the Ottomans built their empire. That was more conquest and fighting and then taking over other countries. But what we see today, you go to Turkey, you see Hagia Sophia, which has like 300-year-old history. You go to Rome, you see the Colosseum. I don't know, 500, 600 years of history. Those guys did it over centuries. Saudi, what they're trying to do is a century project. Like, you can't say that, oh, it will, oh, it's good.
So, and I think what that's why it's scary. I think that's why it's really
but
scary.
But they are doing it. They're at least attempting it, right?
Not even attempting it, Majid.
They will do it. They're succeeding at it.
I've seen photos of the line.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's completely impressive. I'm a firm believer in that short strides in the long term take you so far in life. And it's like, I never used to agree with that, by the way. I always used to agree with, please do the most every single day. And while that is still good, do the most, give your best. I just think
if you're doing 0.1% every day,
exactly.
Do
but
something.
I think short strides are actually the best solution in every single thing. And I think that if they want more time with the project, I think that they should take it. Yeah. If that's an option,
I should
take it.
What you're saying and what I'm saying is that they're not shutting everything down. Now, with oil coming down, budget deficits, a lot of problems because of whatever is happening outside of their control. Whatever is in control of Saudi, they're doing it. Obviously, they're increasing their non-oil trade. Mm. They're increasing everything. They're increasing their investment and getting good returns on them. The only problem that they're facing is uncontrolled circumstances which are happening throughout the world. Trump's tariffs, oil coming down. It puts them in a bad position, not because they did something wrong, but just one guy randomly was like, okay, let's do reciprocal tariffs. Another thing, the thing that I see is not
guy.
That... Yeah, yeah. Sorry, one guy can literally change the world. But the thing is, they're not cutting down. The idea is they're refocusing. So whatever money they have, they're refocusing it into better... or the bigger projects, 2034 World Cup, Riyadh Expo, and NEOM. But even in NEOM, they're very, like, close to heart projects.
Imagine, you know, I saw something very recently, this quote, and it was said by the Saudi prince at the Sports Investment Forum that just took place. I forgot his name.
The football person?
Yeah. He basically has a lot of investments across...
Abdullah, he's prince, he's the grandfather of prince.
I can definitely find this very quickly. Yeah.
But he said that we don't sign checks only, right?
Yes, I found him. Basically, Prince Abdullah, he's the grandson of the late king, Abdulaziz al-Saud. Basically, just very recently, he unveiled a $266 million football fund. And I think what I found very cool about him is the fact that he actually backed clubs in India and in the UAE.
Yeah.
He had investments for football across, the entire MENA region. I mean, the entire world, actually. Yeah. But the point is that he said something. He went like, I feel like there's this misconception that we just have endless cash and we just sign checks. And I just wanted to ask you, Majid, do you think that's true?
Yeah, a lot of people think that. A lot of people who are coming to this region.
That's a lot of people. What do you think?
I think they have the money, but they've gotten very smart with it over the last 5-10 years. Saudis have become very smart. The PwC example, we'll discuss it in detail, but very shortly, they stopped their consulting projects. I think it's not just something happened or they were trying to hire some guy. It's also like they're looking inside. So they've gotten very smart. They invested over the 10 years. They're getting returns. They're like, okay, safe. We're getting something. Mm. It's like you have a backup investment. Like you're doing a job, but you invested in a house and now you're getting rent. So on the job, you're kind of safe. You're like, even if I lose the job, I have something. So Saudi got very smart with their investments. So he's completely right that we have money, but it's not like right now we'll just sign checks. We used to do that maybe when we were trying to build something because we wanted the best people to do our jobs. But now we are very smart with it. So they're not just signing checks. But the main idea about the story, this Dubai property market and Bloomberg story. I did a PTC and I was highlighting that in 2014, the oil prices came down. A lot of people saw their houses values going down 33%, quoted by Bloomberg. 2020, COVID came, oil prices came down again because there was no demand because no one was traveling. So again, property prices came down. We saw that historically. It happened. It wasn't like we're creating these numbers out of thin air. These two crashes of oil prices and real estate market prices happened. So this time, if oil is going from 80, 85 to like $20 down, there is a chance. That's the news. It's not that, the bubble is bursting. Your property at 1 million is now worth pennies. It's not that. It's just that you see historical data and you predict and forecast what may happen. So there is a chance it can happen. There is not like confirmed news that it will happen. That was the PTC. A lot of people are like, no, this happened. Obviously, UAE has done miracles in non-oil trade. A guy quoted that 75% of their GDP was non-oil trade. It's impossible, brother. It can't happen ever. UAE will always rely on oil. They have one of the biggest oil giants, ADNOC, in the world. They just started investing in oil fields in the US. So how can they move their economy away from oil? They'll just diversify it enough that if someday such a situation happens where oil has gone down, they don't have to rely completely on it. And non-oil trade is growing. We signed 26 CEPAs every day. If you listen to the show every day.
Very recently, we actually announced on Smashy Business that Saudi Arabia discovered 14 new fields.
Yeah,
14
fields.
New oil fields. So there is
they
more
will
to
always
come.
Rely
there
on
is
oil.
More to come.
The idea is not that
you think
they'll
always
completely
rely on oil. I don't think they'll always
they will.
Rely on oil.
They can't.
Majid.
It's like
I think it's an asset. It's a great asset
I'll
that
tell
they
you,
have.
You go to Switzerland, you talk about Switzerland, even after 100 years from today, you'll talk about the Swiss Alps and the Swiss chocolate, right? You can't change
it's Dubai viral chocolate now. Dubai viral chocolate.
Yeah, 100 years from now, you'll talk about Dubai viral chocolate.
Not
but
even right now.
The thing is that there is something that is inbuilt in every human, in every nation also. Saudi, the Middle Eastern countries, they have like inbuilt oil-backed money in them. They will always rely on oil. The thing is that how quickly, how soon, and how efficiently they can move away from it. And how much. They will never completely move away from it. It's like US saying that, oh, we'll stop doing trade with the world, but actually he's trying to do that. But any other country, you give me an example of any, Maldives saying we're cutting off on tourism, we want some new industry. It can't happen. It's their core earning thing. But they want to create new industries, and UAE has done that. It's very clearly signed 26 CEPAs, the thing that is like, a lot of people don't understand the importance of CEPAs. It's a very nice way of doing trade with other countries on one-on-one level. You get less tariffs, you sign those, you save trillions of dollars on them. So yeah, that's the thing. Let's move on to the last story. So Dubai, the property market is staying here. It's not going to like crash, but it may slow down. That's the main news. The last news, very quickly and very nicely, put by Qatar again. Qatar has been in the news, saving a lot of countries. Egypt and Qatar have agreed to work toward a $7.5 billion investment package aimed at supporting Egypt's struggling economy. The announcement came as Egyptian President Abdullah Fattah al-Sisi concluded a visit in Doha, where he met with Qatari officials to discuss regional developments and economic cooperation.
Now, details on the timing and structure of the investment package were not disclosed. However, the agreement signals continued Gulf backing for Egypt, and which has faced severe economic challenges, including a foreign currency shortage. Now, last year, the crisis eased after the UAE pledged $35 billion in support, forming a broader $57 billion rescue effort alongside the IMF and EU.
And Abdullah Fattah al-Sisi is now en route to Kuwait for further diplomatic talks, according to Egypt's state-run Middle East news agency. Gulf support remains critical for Cairo as it seeks to stabilize its economy, attract long-term foreign investment. They're also facing a lot of problems because of the Suez Canal problem.
Yes, and I remember, imagine, we were discussing the amount of money that it lost.
They were nearly losing $2 billion year.
That is insane. Yeah. And you know, when I'm taking a look at this, by the way, you know, I just very recently, if you guys heard, it was really big. There was something known as the Arab Plan.
Yeah.
Basically, what happened is President Sisi, you know, he came and said, okay, you know, it's getting out of hand here. You know, they're calling Gaza a piece of real estate. You know, we need to have an emergency meeting. And when he actually called in that meeting, the Prime Minister of Qatar was there.
Yeah, every high level.
Yeah, the Prime Minister of Qatar was there. And basically what this Arab Plan was proposing, that is what they're calling it, is $53 billion to reconstruct Gaza. And the plan was divided into three phases. But, you know, beside the amount of money that was going into it, by the way, right now with the Arab plan, that reconstruction plan, nobody has actually stepped up and said, hey, I'm funding this much towards this specific plan.
Yeah.
Because in the end of the day, there is a lot of fear around taking that money out, putting that money in, because how is it actually going to help people in Gaza?
Yeah.
Is it going to be possible to reach them? You know, all of these questions do come into place. But I think what was interesting for me were the officials who showed up.
Yeah.
The king of Jordan showed up, by the way. I think that one really stood out to me. The fact that he didn't send an official. The king himself came. But, you know, with Qatar, Majid, we really have to ask ourselves, why are they stepping into all these things?
Because they're a very big economy after Saudi.
Of course. But
second UAE. Qatar is the biggest economy.
There.
Also, they have their... I went to Qatar again 4 days. I realized they're the nicest people. They have a very small population. Very, like, lightly populated country.
Mm, even Bahrain. Bahrain is so... I feel like Bahrain in itself is like the size of Dubai.
But these countries, they have low population, but they have big hearts. Mm. That's the ending note from us.
That's a wrap for today, guys. Thank you so much for tuning into the Smashy Business Show. Make sure to follow us across all social media channels at Smashy Business and stay ahead with our daily newsletter. You'll find the subscription link in the description.
This has been a Smashy Business Show, a Smashy Business production, part of the Augustus Media Podcast Network. A big shout out to our 1.5 million monthly listeners across all platforms. As soon as we reach 2 million, we'll tell you. Thank you so much. Have a great day. See you tomorrow.